Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
We dip them in oil and then eat them. We top them with sour cream, more fat, and eat them. Twice bake them with fried cheese and bacon. And then we call the potato the problem. It's the company the potato keeps, not the potato itself.
Chef Del Schroef had to train his taste buds to appreciate a plain baked potato, one without all that extra good stuff. He gives tips for changing up your diet and sticking with it. He's making an appearance at the upcoming Art of Chocolate event, so we're making an adult hot chocolate in honor of that. Chef Daniel Orr throws together a really elaborate chili, but wow, is it worth it. Local flowers from the winter farmers market are much more romantic than commercially produced bouquets. And what does sustainable mean when it comes to food? Harvest Public Media explores that. Hello to Luann Johnson, the reader of our headlines.
Hunger affects 1 in 8 people worldwide every day. To try to understand why so many people are still going hungry, Oxfam created the Good Enough to Eat Index, a study of 125 countries and their access to food. Researchers based their work on 4 questions. Do people have enough to eat? Can they afford to eat? What quality is the food and water available? And what health factors are a result of their diets? The Netherlands ranked number 1 in the world as the best country in which to eat, followed by most Western European countries and Australia. The United States and the UK were both absent from the top 10. Scoring as the worst country in the world in which to eat was Chad, followed by Burundi, India, and Angola. Talk to any corn farmer, and he or she will likely lament the dropping price of corn. But corn growers are not alone. Farmers who grow wheat are beginning to feel the same pinch. A USDA report out this week tells farmers to expect wheat prices to dip even further. Not only are corn prices, which directly correlate to wheat prices, on the decline, but a global wheat bumper crop this year will likely spell an even further decrease in price for American wheat farmers. Countries like Russia, Australia, and Canada put a lot more wheat in the ground the past few planting seasons and are now on track to set a world record. That overabundant harvest will flood the market with wheat, leaving farmers in U.S. wheat belt states like Nebraska, Colorado, Kansas, and Oklahoma with a diminished price. More about wheat. A new variety may have cracked the code to marry the fluffiness of white bread with whole grain nutrition. Snowmass is a hard white wheat variety, a crop in high demand as bread makers increasingly seek new markets. ConAgra has already started including Snowmass in its ultra-grain whole grain flour. You might have seen the ultra-grain logo popping up on some brands at the grocery store, like Azteca Tortillas and Sara Lee Bread. Wheat breeding programs, both public and private, have been hard at work trying to come up with a variety like Snowmass, a type of white wheat that yields well, mills into white flour, and mixes easily into dough. But even with all the interest in Snowmass, food companies still need farmers to grow it. Because Snowmass is still new and a bit risky, ConAgra pays individual farmers extra for every bushel of Snowmass they harvest. These stories are from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media. Read more on our website, eartheats.org.
We share stories like these throughout the week on our Twitter feed. Connect with us at Earth Eats. Food news headlines courtesy of Luann Johnson.
Yep, see you next week.
When you head to the supermarket, you have a lot of choices. You can go organic, buy local, make sure your food is antibiotic-free, or choose from any number of brands, prices, and labels. Now you can add sustainable to the grocery list. Retailers and restaurants like Whole Foods, Chipotle, and Walmart are all providing information to consumers about how sustainably some of their products were produced. But as Harvest Public Media's Abby Fentress-Swanson reports, it's hard to know just what sustainability means and how to judge whether food was produced in a sustainable way.
These are what we call heritage animals. These are St. Croix sheep. There's some red pole cattle coming in across there.
That's Bill Heffernan on his farm near Rocheport, Missouri. Besides raising heritage sheep, cattle, and horses here, Heffernan sells hogs to Chipotle and Whole Foods. 5 years ago, Whole Foods asked farmers in his hog collective to sell the company humanely raised meat. That means the farmers have to follow strict sets of rules so Whole Foods can label their products as, quote, raised with care. For starters, farmers aren't allowed to keep sows in metal stalls called farrowing or gestation crates.
Some of our members still are at the stage one. Many of us are up at stage three, and that means our animals do have access to outside space. None of them, we don't use farrowing stalls.
Getting STEP certified by an auditor takes time and costs about $1,500 in annual fees. That can be a barrier to entry for small farmers.
First of all, they look around the property for about 2 hours, and then sit down, and you've got this booklet to fill out, like as if it's never going to end. And I'm saying, for 300 pigs, I got to answer all these questions?
Those quality audits and piles of paperwork allow Whole Foods to charge more for the meat it says was raised humanely. It's one aspect of the retailer's focus on sustainability, because increasingly consumers are willing to pay more for foods they believe were sustainably produced, like humanely raised pork, free-range chicken, and pesticide-free wine. There's just one problem. What does sustainable actually mean?
So there's not necessarily just one certification that people are going to find stamped on their food that says this is a sustainable food product. We don't have that yet and are not likely to have it anytime soon.
Rob Myers is one of the directors of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education Program. He says consumers sometimes mistakenly confuse sustainable with local or organic.
But local in itself does not necessarily connotate sustainable, because as you're implying, you could have a lot of pesticides applied, or you could have a farm that is not preventing their soil from washing away or contaminating local water sources or doing other things that most people would say that's not very good from a sustainability standpoint.
Whole Foods' answer to the sustainability question is labeling. It is unrolling a new sustainability rating system on all of its produce and flowers by September. They'll rate these items as good or better or best on the label, and each rating will correspond to the way the product was grown. They already do that with seafood. Here's Margaret Wittenberg, a vice president at Whole Foods.
We have had customers asking about sustainability. You know, how is this particular kale raised, or where do these flowers come from? What is the sustainability of our earth? How do the plants work into that?
Still, every retailer defines sustainability differently. Whole Foods is using factors like soil health, how pollinators are affected by pesticides, and farm worker wages to score its products. Safeway and Chipotle have pledged to buy pork only from producers who phase out gestation crates. One way Walmart gauges sustainability is through trying to limit the amount of fertilizer farmers apply to their fields. The reality is that no one wants their food to damage the environment, and now shoppers can put a price on what they care about. But with so many definitions out there, how do consumers know what is and isn't worth paying extra for?
It can be frustrating when you're trying to talk to someone and explain what you're thinking and stuff. I think there's so many factors that have to be considered.
Eric Cartwright is executive chef for campus dining services at the University of Missouri in Columbia. In the kitchen of a popular student hangout here, the chef says he's responsible for making sure 2.5 million meals a year get served. In a perfect world, all of that food would be sustainably produced.
So I think our approach is to really look at what practices are being used on the farm, whether that be something that's 5 miles away or 500 miles away. You know, and especially as we work with a lot of our smaller farmers, there's the relationship that happens.
But it's not possible for all of us to have that kind of close relationship with the people that grow and raise our food. For now, we have to rely on information that retailers and restaurants provide on labels and menus to determine the sustainability of our food. Abby Fentress-Swanson, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration focused on issues of food, fuel, and field. More stories like this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. Del Schroff has struggled with his weight his whole life. He's been vegan since 1997, but that didn't mean he was healthy about it. In 2005, he decided to make a change. He's now the executive chef and co-owner of the Wellness Forum in Columbus, Ohio. We talk about his personal food journey and how it relates to his upcoming appearance at the Art of Chocolate. But we start off with a topic that might be on people's minds this time of year. Can chocolate be part of a New Year's weight loss plan?
Yes, but in perspective, you can have any of those things that you enjoy in life, but our problem we tend to make this distinction, or need to make the distinction, between our regular diet and a treat. We do tend to play mind games with ourselves so that we can justify some of the bad habits that we have.
Well, let's talk about your specific food journey. You went vegan in 97, but then gained a bunch of weight, like hundreds of pounds over a couple years.
Yeah, 200 pounds. You know, there are a lot of unhealthy vegan foods that can contribute to weight gain, including things that we think of as healthy. So avocado in excess is an unhealthy food. Nuts and seeds and excess quantities. And, of course, beer can be vegan, and potato chips can be vegan, and french fries can be vegan. So there's a lot of very, very high-fat, calorically dense foods out there that happen to be vegan that also happen to be very unhealthy.
So then describe to me what you eat now.
Well, we have a food pyramid that we use here at the Wellness Forum where I work. And at the base of that food pyramid, the foods that make up the biggest part of your diet, and this scares most people, believe it or not, it's not protein, it's carbohydrates. And it's complex carbohydrates like beans and grains and starchy vegetables like sweet potatoes, potatoes, and corn. And the reason is these foods are nutritionally dense foods that are high in fiber but low in calories. So it's really difficult to overeat these kinds of foods and to gain weight.
I think people are going to hear potatoes, not sweet potatoes.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Potatoes.
We're starchophobes.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to think, that's not going to help me lose weight.
Okay, the potatoes are not the problem. And if people get this, then they're going to go on to lead very healthy, long lives. Potatoes are not the problem. It's what we do to them that's the problem. So we dip them in oil and then eat them. We top them with sour cream, more fat, and eat them. Twice bake them with fried cheese and bacon. And then we call the potato the problem. It's the company the potato keeps. It's not the potato itself.
So sour cream, cheese, bacon, these sorts of high-fat, really rich foods. I listened to an interview where you talked about sort of retraining your taste buds. Just a plain baked potato, now that satisfies you. So how do you retrain your taste buds?
The hard part is you have to stop eating those other foods. We tend to think if I just have the sour cream every now and then, that's okay. But you really do need to train the taste buds so that they get used to the taste, real taste of food. So it's a more than multi-week period of just not eating those foods and of eating differently and then letting your taste buds down-regulate. And it works. And sugar is a big one. Getting rid of the sugar from your diet, the processed sugar, it's amazing how much sweeter fresh fruit tastes when you don't have the habit of sugar in your diet.
So that sounds like a really fabulous outcome, but going cold turkey, say taking refined sugar out of your diet, cold turkey sounds miserable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was a grumpy person, and I've done it more than once because, you know, here's how addictive some of these foods are. I can eat one piece of sugar periodically, and it sends me back into a spiral if I'm not careful. That awareness is part of what can help save you, too, if you're careful. It's easy.
This all sounds like people who are, you know, trying to cut out refined sugars or eat healthier for the New Year's, gosh, they're fighting an uphill battle. So can you give some, I don't know, words of encouragement to folks who are trying to lose some pounds?
Well, it's doable. But you have to sort of change thinking from this is a, I'm going to go on a diet for 10 weeks and lose the weight, and then I can go back to the way that I used to eat, and that's just not true. So the diet that I eat now is the diet that I'm going to eat the rest of my life. Does it mean I'll never eat potato chips? No, but it means that I'm going to have them in perspective. I haven't had a potato chip in probably 4 months.
God, and you don't miss it?
Well, I think about it every now and then. No, I try not to focus on them. I focus on other things. I direct my attention to more important things. So part of it is I sanitize my environment so that if you come into my house, you won't see potato chips, you won't see candy or chocolate or beer or any of those things that I love that are highly addictive foods. I also have created allies for myself so that everybody knows that I struggle with food addiction and with bad eating habits. And so I have allies and not people who are fighting me. You know, so if you're not helping me and willing to work with me, then the chances are that we're not going to spend a whole lot of time together. And I know that sounds like a cruel thing to do, but this is my health. And then learning to eat, if you look at our pyramid, eating, I eat six times a day. I eat smaller meals. I eat these high-fiber foods so that I don't allow myself to get too hungry. The starvation diet doesn't work. You can't reduce the amount of foods you eat to the place where you can lose weight and keep it off. The hunger response is one of the strongest responses we have. It's what's kept us alive for all these millennia. and it will be satisfied. So learn to eat on a regular basis. Eat the high-fiber foods that fill you up that aren't full of calories. And then it makes the cravings easier to manage. Because when you're hungry, cravings are impossible to manage.
Well, you know, I'm hearing you talk about all these great healthful ways to live, but then imagining you at the Art of Chocolate, which is this inherently indulgent event that has chocolate treats all over the place. So surely you're not going to be chiding the people who come to this event.
No. I think that, I mean, if you go to an event knowing what's there, you make that decision to do that, you do that. That's not my goal is not to play judge, jury, and executioner at all, but to educate. And I may eat a piece of dark chocolate myself if it's looking good.
I want to bring it back to chocolate for one last question. So obviously chocolate desserts, sure. Mole sauces, chocolate-based
yes.
Mexican sauces. Nice. Other chocolate uses in savory dishes?
I used to work for, the first restaurant I worked at was a vegetarian restaurant, and I'm not a chili lover, but they have a chili on their menu that has chocolate in it. It has unsweetened chocolate and fennel are two of the key ingredients. Mm. It was a mushroom and bean chili, and it was amazing. But it's insane how the chocolate has this undercurrent of flavor that really gives it a richness and a depth of flavor that you wouldn't expect.
Thank you, sir. This has been such fun.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and see you in a
Maybe
couple
I'll
weeks.
See you at the, yeah, I'll see you in a few weeks.
Chef Del Schroff will be the special guest at the 10th Annual Art of Chocolate in Bloomington on Sunday, January 26th at the IU Art Museum. Information at weekofchocolate.com and read the transcript of my conversation with Del at eartheats.org. Coming up, a chocolate recipe because we've got chocolate on the brain right now, obviously. And then...
here comes the pumpkin. You could use diced fresh pumpkin, but we're going to be adding a pumpkin puree today. And what this is going to do is add a touch of sweetness as well as give it a nice, rich, kind of creamy viscosity to the chili.
Date Night on Us with Chili by Chef Daniel Orr. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all four locations and a garden center at East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage and hatha yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com.
So welcome back to Earth Eats. Today we are going to do another wonderful winter dish. So as the air gets colder and colder into these late winter days, we can enjoy a wonderful chili. And this you can make ahead and eat for several days. All right, so just a little bit of olive oil. You could use any type of fat that you like. We're going to add the bison. And you can see the bison's a real rich, dark, almost burgundy-looking meat. It's very, very lean. Just going to break that up. Okay, and we're going to just start adding the other ingredients. It's a really simple recipe. It's just about tossing all this stuff in. And this is going to be a bison, pumpkin, and lentil chili. We've got some diced carrots, red and green peppers, a couple cups of fresh diced tomatoes. We've got a quarter cup of sorghum. Now, sorghum is a type of molasses that we use. It comes from a grain that's kind of close to a corn, which is great for people that have gluten intolerances because you can still use ground sorghum. And it's going to add a sweetness. What they do is they reduce the pressed juice of the sorghum cane until it gets a nice, rich amber color. It has a nice, sweet flavor, kind of like molasses. Do you want to try it?
Let's give this a shot. Ooh, that's so rich.
So, give a nice flavor to the chili. We've got lots of onions. You can't have too many onions in a chili. I'm going to toss all this together. And at Earth Eats, where there are onions, what usually follows?
Oh, garlic.
Absolutely.
Of course.
So we got our garlic. Got probably a couple tablespoons of garlic. Okay, and now we're going to add our seasonings. My favorite, sweet seasons, which is that kind of Chinese five-spice flavor. Got some ground cumin, some cayenne pepper, which is going to give it a little bit of a bite, and a little bit of cinnamon. And we just got a couple more ingredients.
Oh, here comes the pumpkin.
Here comes the pumpkin. You could use diced fresh pumpkin, but we're going to be adding a pumpkin puree today. And what this is going to do is add a touch of sweetness, as well as give it a nice, rich, kind of creamy viscosity to the chili. About a cup and a half of lentils. And the last ingredient, this is where the Columbus Cowboy comes in. This is the some old coffee. So when you have leftover coffee, don't throw it away. What I like to do is to use it in chilies and stews. Okay, so I'm just bringing the water up to just the surface. Okay, so we're going to let this come to a full boil, reduce the temperature to a simmer, and then let it simmer for about a half an hour or until it gets nice and thick and chili-like. Finish it off with a little bit of salt and pepper, and we'll be good to go.
There's the main course for your Earth Eats-inspired date night. Now for the decorations, some local flowers. Linda Chapman of Harvest Moon Flower Farm has a booth set up at the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market.
Okay, these are our large flower bouquets, and they have a big white oriental lily with about 4 to 5 buds on it. And then some stock, which is a white or yellowish flower. It smells like cloves. And then I've mixed in some long stems of rosemary and boxwood, eucalyptus and dusty miller, which looks really frosty. And then I put some sticks in it as well. I've got some pussy willows that are starting to force out and some red stem dogwood.
Harvest Moon is able to grow flowers 12 months of the year thanks to a solar greenhouse and 2 hoop houses. Chapman has also learned which flowers like colder temperatures around 40 or 50 degrees. She says these flowers wouldn't even think of growing in June. The color scheme of today's bouquets are green and white, but come Valentine's Day, Chapman promises some bursts of color.
What I'm hoping for this year is I got my ranunculus in quite a bit more early than I have in years past, kind of as an experiment. Looks like a successful one. Ranunculus can be pink and yellow and red and orange, white, very, very bright, very, very romantic flowers, multiple petaled. So they'll be coming on for Valentine's Day. I'm not sure yet if I'll have tulips. I'm aiming for that. I grow some tulips. We grow 3,000 tulips in the ground, but I've got some in crates so I can put them in hoop houses and move them to various microclimates to force them. And we'll have anemones, which are purple.
She says her blooms were harvested just the day before, so this fact also means that the flowers will live longer than bouquets you buy from big box stores. She also says her farm offers varieties of flowers that grocery stores wouldn't ever think to carry.
From our farm, we grow over 100 varieties of flowers, so you're never going to see the kind of stuff that comes off of our farm at Kroger. Kroger, you're generally in the roses and carnation kind of thing, and I personally find that kind of boring to look at. And I'm really struck, as we've been doing this, I'm really struck by the sense of there's a certain sterility to the wholesale and in flowers that we get compared to our flowers. Our flowers seem to be more dynamic, and they have more of an energy, a living energy about them. And I feel like you can actually see that and perceive it. So there you go. Kind of esoteric, but that's what it is.
See photos of these gorgeous flower bouquets from Harvest Moon Flower Farm on our website, eartheats.org.
I remember when I was a kid, the smell of the hot chocolate when you came in from sledding was always such a fun thing and so rewarding, and you'd be pulling off all those layers of clothing and Mom would be bringing out the hot chocolate. So this kind of is an adult way to bring back those memories.
We're coming back round to the chocolate with Chef Daniel Orr. A perfect treat to round out the evening.
First of all, we have some really good dark chocolate. You want to use something that's fairly bitter. So we're just going to just really grate it fairly finely. Okay, and then again, you want to use a good quality chocolate. The better the chocolate you use, the better the quality of the beverage you're going to have. And since you're celebrating, go ahead and splurge and get some good chocolate. All right, we have this nicely chopped. We also have a couple of vanilla beans. And what we're going to do is we're just going to slice those lengthwise. Okay, and when we do that, we're exposing the little seeds inside the vanilla bean. And those are going to really perfume the warm dairy mixture that you have. Now over here we have our milk, which I've already scalded. I'm just going to pour that into a nice hot pot. Okay, and then we're going to add our cream. Okay, I'm going to add the vanilla beans. Okay, and then our other flavorings are going to be some cinnamon sticks. I've got 3 pieces of cinnamon stick. I've taken a vegetable peeler and I've peeled half an orange, so we have these nice chunks of orange zest that we'll be able to strain out later. Okay, I'm going to add a pinch of salt. Now, a lot of people don't think of putting salt or pepper into sweet things, but what it does is it wakes up your tongue. It allows you to taste the other things even better, so it'll really bring out those spicy flavors. You don't want to put enough to make it taste salty, but you just want to wake up your palate a little bit. Our sweetener, we're going to use some brown sugar, and we have some of my sweet seasoned spice blend. If you don't have that, you can always use some nutmeg and allspice. Okay, I'm going to add the chocolate, okay, and we're just going to stir that in. And we just want all that chocolate to melt and incorporate into the dairy. And once it's done, we can turn off the fire. All right, once the hot chocolate is sat for about 5 or 7 minutes, you want to take your whisk and really kind of agitate the liquid, and you're going to make it a little bit frothy. You're also going to make sure that all those little bits of chocolate are completely mixed in. All that we have left to do is to serve it. You have your nice warm mugs to ladle your hot chocolate into. And then depending on what you want, you could either put a float of some whipped cream on top, or you could put a marshmallow or even a homemade marshmallow on top of this. But what we're going to do is we're going to celebrate the Midwest with just a wee splash of bourbon. And so it makes it kind of an adult drink, something that you can celebrate with.
This is decadent, for sure. Follow the recipe for this and the chili at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Linda Chapman, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Del Schroef, and everyone at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all 4 locations and a garden center at East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Fix yourself something nice and warm this winter. It's Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.